in the last 26 days, what extent of matching has been done by you? What steps have you taken in the last 26 days? The application is absolutely silent on that.
On February 15, in a groundbreaking ruling, the Supreme Court shook the political landscape by deeming the electoral bond scheme unconstitutional. The scrapping of the scheme just months before the Lok Sabha elections and 7 years post its inception has sent quite a few shockwaves through the corridors of power. But here's the kicker. The apex court wasn't done just yet. It dropped the bomb, directing the State Bank of India, the scheme's issuing bank, to spill the beans on every electoral bond contribution received by political parties from 2019 till date. When the SBI pleaded for a deadline extension till June 30th, the Supreme Court wasn't having any of it. It put its foot down, demanding the bank to cough up the details by 5 p.m. on March 12th. Hi, you're listening to On Manorama's Explainer podcast, Newsbreak, a weekly show that breaks down news in a clutter-free manner. This is Harita Benjamin, and today we are here to discuss the huge controversy surrounding electoral bonds. So, electoral bonds is a financial instrument which was introduced in India in 2018 to facilitate transparent political funding. These bonds were meant to serve as the means for an individual or a corporation to donate money to political parties without disclosing their identities. So, yes, it is this anonymity factor that the Supreme Court found a problem with, and let's see why. So, today we are joined by esteemed journalist and trustee of the Reporters Collective Trust, Nitin Sethi, to discuss the matter with us. Nitin and his team has been investigating electoral bonds since 2019 to bring out evidence to expose the scam within it. Their work has been put before the Supreme Court by the petitioners, which had led to the judgment of scrapping the bonds in the first place. So welcome to the show, Nitin, and we can't wait to hear what you have to say on the matter.
Thank you so much, Harita, for having me here with you.
Great. So let's begin with the basics. Could you brief our audience on why electoral bonds were conceptualized in India in the first place?
So this is back in 2017 when the then finance minister, Mr. Arun Jaitley, introduces the idea of electoral bonds during the budget session. And he makes two contradictory statements in a paragraph where he says electoral bonds are being brought in to raise the levels of transparency in electoral funding for political parties. And he says this would be done by providing security and privacy to donors by ensuring secrecy of who they are donating to. And I think there is part justification in what he says, that till then a large amount of donations do come in the form of cash to political parties, which is unaccounted for as well. Correct. And in 2018, then he and his ministry brings forth the detailed rules of the electoral bonds process. And he reiterates at that point to the parliament and outside that there's a high need for a system which allows banked money or money through banking channels to be donated to political parties in secrecy to ensure that donors are not threatened by parties they don't donate to. And that, he says, will bring transparency and openness.
All right. So the top court had actually said that the scheme was violative of the right to freedom of speech and expression under Article 19(1)(a) of the Constitution. So it held that the voter's right to information includes the right to know the financial contributions to a political party. Now, what you said is that Jaitley used the same principle and saying that, you know, we are trying to defend them. So that the political parties who are not contributed to don't take them to task, right? So I think it is the same principle which the Supreme Court used while striking down the electoral bond scheme, right? So could you elaborate on these fundamental demerits of the concept which was outlined by the Supreme Court and what you have seen?
So I think there were fundamental flaws, to put it politely, in what the government had suggested. or brought forth. In the name of transparency, it had brought forth a format of secrecy and opaqueness, something that the Election Commission and the Reserve Bank of India had protested against very vehemently at that time, and they'd been overridden by the government for several good reasons, I think. One, that in an election process and a democracy, our elected representatives should only be answerable and accountable to voters and citizens. But in this case, they would naturally be accountable to donors who had secretly donated crores of rupees to them. And as the Supreme Court later held, no corporate would donate to a politician or a political party for any other purposes than perhaps furthering their own business. At the same time, creating a channel which allowed foreign entities to also fund money secretly to Indian political parties, to my mind, held a great threat to the integrity of Indian democratic processes. As we found, and that the system was built in a fashion where arms of the government would know a lot more about who was donating to whom than anyone else, including the citizens, that it would skew the scheme in favor of anyone who was in power, in this case, the BJP. And as the data came out over years, we found that was true. The party in power at the center, BJP, got a majority of the donations that came out of the electoral bond process, to the point that what they received was more than the next three parties put together, and by a fair margin. I think Supreme Court, when it finally, after years, passed its judgment on this case, clearly held that citizens have a right to know if corporates are influencing their politics and their politicians, and they have a right to know who's donating to political parties. And that was one of the contentions that the Supreme Court held while holding the electoral bonds unconstitutional.
Okay, so Nitin, could you give us a few more statistics on, how the electoral bonds funding is placed? So we know for a fact that, the BJP is having more, but how much more? I've heard that it is around six times more than the second, largest party. And how much of its funds are actually sourced through electoral bonds? Could you elaborate on that for our audience?
Sure. So, Harita, your numbers are right. BJP did get roughly 6.5 times more than the next party, which is the Congress, the principal opposition party. And that doesn't give you a sense of the size. If around 16,000 crores, if I'm not mistaken, eventually went through the electoral bonds process, a good 60 to 65% of that went to the BJP. That's the quantum we're looking at. Okay. In terms of how much it was a percentage of what BJP got, it was a very speedily rising percentage, but it wasn't a substantive percentage of the overall donation that BJP got. Okay. And you must understand why that is still significant. The other donation that BJP and parties get is in the form of cash, which is unaccounted for. Again, parties don't have to name where they got it from if they got it in small tranches.
Right.
And that's how BJP was collecting a lot. But this was the largest tranche of banked money or money in the banks of BJP that it was finding very easily for itself, which meant it could make these payments for many things, from hiring helicopter services and aeroplanes to ride during elections, to put ads all over newspapers and social media.
Right.
This was money being used where you would need banked channels to make payments. At the same time, you would not know where this money is really come from. So none of us, neither you nor I nor any other citizens, would be ever able to figure out if the money came from a foreign source, if money was generated out of, hypothetically, the drug markets or arms sale or whatever other illegal activity. Because if you remember, the BJP government had amended the law to say, even if a company has made no profit whatsoever in the last some years. So let's say you have a company which has done absolutely no business in several years. Even that company can donate hundreds and thousands of crores to a political party. Now, you can imagine if you and I were not making a rupee of income, but we were still donating hundreds of crores to a political party, what everyone would think of us.
Exactly.
Would wonder where this money is coming from, etc., etc. And this had been now legalized by the government. So the money as a full quantum of what BJP was getting was not substantive. It was less than half, if I'm not mistaken. But it was rapidly increasing. So say from first tranche of the sale of electoral bonds where BJP got somewhere around 200 crores, it had reached the point where it was now getting 1,000 crores upwards. So the money was increasing, and the likelihood was that because general elections were coming up, the last window of electoral bonds would open very soon, and thousands of crores worth of bonds would get sold and encashed now, which the Supreme Court has prevented, thankfully.
But less than half is also a lot, right? I mean, that when humongous. You look at the quantum, it's just huge.
So, it's humongous because it puts all other political parties at a great disadvantage.
Correct.
And it, again, the impact of that you can see in our Indian politics, where there's one party which can spend hundreds of crores on advertisement, etc., also mobilizes money through the government routes. I mean, in my view, it also abuses the government exchequer by using their resources to promote its politics, but also additionally is able to do ads, rallies all over at scale that no other opposition political party can. And in electoral democracy, that's a humongously unfair deal. While we all know that parties in power do get more money than opposition, but the sheer differential between them would mean that we were setting up a democracy meant to fail.
Right. So it's like starting the race at two different points, yeah?
Absolutely.
Right. So let's move on to the more recent issue. Now, the SBI has stated that the data related to the issuance of the bond and the redemption of the bond were recorded in two different silos. So no central database was maintained and donor anonymity was maintained. So that's what they are claiming. And they sought an extension of the time till June 30, saying that they need another 4 months to match these two silos. So is their claim credible? I was reading through your Twitter thread, and you said that they have such a massive number of employees and a lot of resources at their disposal. So it shouldn't be a problem according to your evaluation. So is that the case, or could you elaborate on this a little more?
Sure. So let's go back to basics of how a bank works, and that will help us understand whether the State Bank of India was being honest or not, or less than honest.
Right.
When you and I, either of us, open an account in a bank, and this can be anyone, and we transact, whether we take out money or deposit money, the bank carries out several entries, or what you would think is accounting entries in its software, to say, hey, here's a person who came and has taken out money and given to Y. It would create it in Y's account, and at the end, that entire transaction of where the money started from, where it left, and where it reached would be meticulously recorded, because at the end, the bank in some sense is a custodian of your money. It cannot afford to let that money disappear in any form. Now, you could do that in the form of a check. You could do that in a form of an electronic transfer through UPI or other means. But at the end, every moment of your interaction with the bank is mapped and recorded in its softwares, including at what point, in which branch, which officer opened your account to make the transaction. Even that data is stored on the core bank software, a banking software of any bank. The electoral bonds is also in some sense just another instrument to move money. It's a bearer bond, which means it does not have the name of the person who will benefit from the bond. it is just, say, you and I went and bought a bond for, say, let's presume, if we weren't in journalism, a crore worth of bond.
Right.
And the bond would have saying, here's Mr. X has bought this. Here's a bearer bond. Whoever takes it to the SBI next will get that 1 crore rupees. Now, it's basically money moving hands. And for any bank to maintain that, it would necessarily have to have a transaction record of where it was bought, against what bank account, whether it was by UPI or by electronic transfer or by check, etc. And when you go back to the State Bank of India's internal records of how it would maintain these transactions, it's very clear. And it's Reporters Collective has put this evidence out with documents that the bank would treat it as any other transaction, financial transaction, where it would keep meticulous records, checking who has deposited this money, who's encashing it. In fact, there was a special unit in the State Bank of India called the Transaction Banking Unit in the Bombay Corporate Office of State Bank of India, which was particularly made in charge of this because this was a sensitive transaction involving political parties, etc. And that trail was maintained throughout. In fact, the documents we made public show that the State Bank of India insisted upon a method in which such an audit trail would be maintained for each electoral bond sold and purchased. But the bank at the end came back to the Supreme Court requesting for about 3 months' time to disclose the data, claiming that the data was kept at various branches in physical form, what it called sealed envelopes, and inside what it claimed to be silos.
Right.
It said matching these would therefore take a lot of time to connect who bought it to who encashed it, would therefore take a lot of time because there are more than about 22,000 individual bonds that they would have to match. If you look back at what that really means, here's a bank which deals in thousands of crores every day. Here's a bank that has more than 2.5 lakh employees, all of them trained accountants. This is not unskilled labor. Some of the best account keepers in the country. Bank that does crores of transactions on a daily basis, a bank that closes its accounts, which means it tallies every account every evening, 365 days a year, was claiming that 16,000 crores worth of data was sitting inside two boxes physically,
right,
under their scrutiny, and nobody in their entire system in 3 or 4 years had looked at that data. Which means neither the auditors, neither the Reserve Bank of India, nor the top audit committee of the bank, which is a statutory committee, had looked at it. To me, as somebody who in the past has been a failed chartered accountant, if I may say, it is incredulous that a bank would even claim this. If this was true, it would be a bigger banking scandal than the electoral bond itself. That 16,000 crores worth of records could be kept outside the banking system, unaudited, unchecked, unverified, and in sealed envelopes in the 21st century. To me, it would scare me about being a State Bank of India customer. But we all know that was a half-truth and a lie, because the bank's own statements, its internal documents, said otherwise. How can I say, the other parallel you should think of is, say, this is a bearer bond.
Right.
A parallel equivalent is, say, if the State Bank of India also sells and purchases gold or bullion, which is a, you know, asset, some value being held in a physical asset, which does not have a number. So say this gold biscuit, it does not have a number, it does not have an identification, unlike an electoral bond, which has a secret serial number. Yet the bank is able to manage it, sell it, purchase it, keep stock of every milligram of it,
right,
inside its banking system. Now, here's the same bank saying, here's this electoral bond with a secret serial number, which is meant to keep only an audit trail for the enforcement agencies as per law. And yet we've kept it in two so-called boxes or silos in sealed envelopes and nobody knows what's in them. So at many levels, it's incredulous. I've been polite in saying it's half a lie. I would call it complete hogwash, to be truthful.
Right. So now the Supreme Court has actually demanded to give whatever data you are, be it in silos or whatever, just give us what you have. So will this data be useful if SBI is going to present these two separate of sets of data? Can independent agents or, you know, auditors actually match it and, you know, find out the trail? Is it possible?
So, again, if we go back to yesterday's Supreme Court order on the contempt petition and the SBI's plea, the court has said the petitioner, the SBI, speaking on their behalf, Mr. Harish Salve, the lawyer, requested that it's very difficult and time-consuming for the bank to match the donor with the beneficiary political party. In which case, the Supreme Court said, we haven't asked for that. What we're asking is you just give us a separate list of all the donors and how much they bought, and a separate unconnected list of how much each political party got in different tranches.
Correct.
Which means, in my reading or my reading of the judgment as listening to the hearing yesterday, the bank is now not required to tell us who paid the money to a specific political party. Just that, say, you and I bought an electoral bond, but they'll never come to know whether we gave it to BJP or Congress.
Right.
In my reading of the judgment, the Supreme Court has also not specifically asked that the SBI reveal the secret serial numbers on each of the electoral bond, through which it would be a matter of minutes to match the beneficiary against the donor, even in case the bank hadn't. I think that makes it fairly difficult to find with accuracy who donates to whom in these 3-4 years.
Correct.
In some cases, it might be possible on a generic level to come to know, say in a window period of 15 days, if a large percentage of bonds was bought only by one entity and a fairly large percentage went to only one political party, then one could fairly conclude that it was from this entity to that party. But again, that would not be conclusive. And I think there, the SBI lawyer has played, Mr. Salve has played in court, or unwillingly or unknowingly has fallen for the trick by excluding the opportunity for us as citizens to know who actually donated. Because if you remember, the original Supreme Court order said citizens have a right to know which corporate is giving money to which party. Let's presume innocence and gullibility on behalf of the Supreme Court. But I think it missed the bus by half by denying citizens that right in its yesterday's order.
All right. So I think with that, we can wind up today's show. So moving forward, how do you see the entire electoral bond scheme and the Supreme Court, drama playing out?
Sure. I think while the electoral bonds era is over, I think there's other information that we, Reporters Collective and stories that we put out, which is as worrisome. Reporters Collective showed that in last few weeks, the government's brought about changes to the Income Tax Act, which allows and requires every donor to share information on who they have given donations to the Income Tax Department, particularly if they are seeking tax exemption as the electoral donations provide. Now, to me and to us, that is even more worrisome, because here is now a legalized form where the political party in power and its arm, the Income Tax Department, will get information by force from every entity, individual company, etc., on who people are donating to. And then it can be used discreetly, secretly, to go after whoever the political party in power wants, and there is complete discretion in who the income tax department will pursue and who it will not. The donors are required to give transaction level details every year in its annual return, which is the first time it's happening.
Okay.
And this is information that the election commission itself is not allowed to collect. So to me, while the electoral bonds era is over, I think the government has put in place a surveillance mechanism over all donors, very quietly, discreetly, without citizens knowing. And that is even more worrisome than the electoral bonds itself.
Thanks a lot, Nitin, for joining us. It's a wrap of today's episode of On Manorama's Newsbreak, an explainer podcast produced by Harita Benjamin with technical production by Idea Brew Studios. It comes out every week and is available on all podcast platforms. Do follow onmanorama.com for more updates.